Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this day back in 1955 that singer Harry Belafonte recorded the song Day-O. The name of that song was changed to what? Was it A, Haitian Farewell, B, Only You, C, The Banana Boat Song, or D, Jello? So what was the title of this 1958 song, Day-O, changed to anyway? And question number two, it was on this very day, back in 1998, that Mark Nieto filed a lawsuit against the band Aerosmith for what? Was it A, he sued Aerosmith for alleged loss of affection from his wife? Was it B, he sued Aerosmith for alleged loss of hearing? Was it C, he sued Aerosmith for alleged loss of $1,000? Or D, Nieto sued Aerosmith for all of the above after attending one of their concerts? So what was the alleged reason the suit was filed today back in 1998? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of October 18th. Well, it was on this very day back in 1957 that Paul McCartney made his debut appearance with a band known as The Quarrymen in Norris Green, Liverpool. This band, founded by John Lennon, became known as The Beatles in 1960. And it was 51 years ago today, 1973, that the Sydney Opera House officially opened. That structure gave lasting definition to the Sydney skyline. That was 1973 today. And in country music news, we have this article titled, George Strait Reveals the Two Things That Every Great Song Must Have. This is written by Clayton Edwards, October 14, 2024, in AmericanSongwriter.com. George Strait is hailed as the king of country music for a reason. Over the course of his career, he has launched more than 60 singles to the top of the country charts. He has also notched more than 20 number one albums on the Billboard Top Country Albums chart. More than that, Strait has inspired countless artists and, in the early days of his career, helped to spearhead a movement of traditional country artists. So it's safe to say that he knows a great song when he hears it. While Strait has written some of his songs and co-penned a few with his son, his biggest hits were outside cuts. This means that he doesn't just know how to assemble a great song. He is also a master at choosing songs from other writers and making them his own. A recent TikTok video shows King George revealing the recipe for a great song. I think that a great song has to have a great melody. When you get a great melody and then great lyrics, then you have a great song, Strait explained. George Strait likely understands that it takes more than great songs to make a legendary country music career. While the music is the heart of it, Strait's image plays a major role in his appeal. However, unlike some artists who cultivate a cowboy image or persona, King George comes by his naturally. He grew up on a ranch in Texas. His father was a rancher and teacher who passed his values down to his sons. Strait then passed those values down to his son, who is keeping it alive with his children. He discussed this and revealed that record executives wanted him to change his image and his name during his acceptance speech when he won the Wrangler Western Heritage Award in 2021. When I first signed with MCA Records in 1981, all of the people were going, "Take the hat off." Can you imagine if I would have done that? Strait said, laughing at the idea. Then I had a producer early on, and he was trying to get me to change my name to Kane Cooper, he revealed. My dad was so glad I didn't do that. Liz Liebestrom introduces our classical music news. It's called Listomania, the bizarre phenomena that took Europe by storm. This is written by Will Padfield, ClassicFM.com, October the 12th, 2024. There's a sense of overwhelming, overbearing hysteria. Hordes of adoring fans jostling to get up close, elbowing past each other just to catch a glimpse. The screams are deafening. No, this is not the Beatles live in Shea Stadium in 1965, nor is it Taylor Swift at the O2 in 2024. It is, in fact, the scenes at a performance of a musician who is as rock and roll as it gets, Franz Liszt. It seems strange enough to us today that a classical musician could elicit such intense feelings of adoration. But in the 1840s, this phenomena was frankly alarming. This superstar virtuoso pianist and composer had such a powerful effect on the public that the term Listomania was invented to describe the behavior of his fans more than a century before the Beatlemania of the 1960s. Heinrich Heine, the German writer who coined the term, described the veritable insanity of the crowds, liking it to a disease that had spread throughout Europe. The symptoms of this mania were startling. Fans were so obsessed that they wore his portrait on brooches. Women would fight over locks of his hair, and whenever he broke a piano string, admirers would desperately attempt to obtain it to make a bracelet. Some would even carry glass vials to pour his coffee dregs into and rush to collect stubs from one of his cigars. Confused? You would be completely forgiven for wondering how on earth this came about. To understand, we need to look at the context that Liszt was living and working in. Up until the beginning of the 19th century, classical music had been a mostly civilized art form, performed in church or at court. There are a few examples of rock-style-type behavior, such as a musical duet between Mozart and Clementi, and the fame of celebrated countertenor and diva Farinelli. But it was not until the emergence of a violinist named Paganini that we get a sense of the stardom that would later be seen with Liszt. Paganini took the definition of virtuoso to an entirely new level, leading to legends that he sold his soul to the devil to pay for his skill. He also liked to prepare the strings on his violin so that they would snap, further wowing crowds with his ability to play on with just one remaining string. Liszt was completely enthralled by seeing Paganini play in 1832, once saying that, quote-unquote, wonderful things might be done with the piano if its technical possibilities were developed as those of the violin have been by Paganini. After this, the young man who, in contrast to the devil-possessed violinist, had been considering becoming a priest, starting practicing now up to 14 hours a day on the piano. He developed an outstanding technique characterized by lightning-fast fingerwork, precise tempo, and pure power. This was combined with his distinctive and quintessentially romantic aesthetic in a post-French Revolution war, which was bursting with new ideas, set against an atmosphere that was a strong cocktail of longing, passion, and terror. Long hair, intense eyes, and sharp facial features, he possessed a magnetism that was bewitching to all who saw him. Perhaps the closest comparison is the poet Lord Byron, who himself was no stranger to mass adoration, affairs, scandal, and all the other trimmings that typified a great romantic artist. The Byron mania of 1812 set the stage for Liszt, and the result was like nothing anyone had witnessed before in the entire history of music. He was, quite simply, seen as a god. The whole of Europe appeared to be infected by this dashing, long-haired, mysterious man, smashing and breaking pianos, an act later replicated by rock bands such as The Who. While, of course, we don't condone destroying instruments, the pure theater of the gesture drove crowds wild. Liszt would bash away at the keys until they couldn't take it anymore. Liszt sadly died before the age of recordings, but thankfully we get a sense of his virtuosic prowess from the compositions he wrote during this period of intense stardom. His 19 Hungarian Rhapsodies, written between 1846 and 1853, are a tour de force of technical wizardry combined with a deep understanding of the dramatic. The particularly famous Second Rhapsody became embedded in the public consciousness through its inclusion in an episode of Tom and Jerry, which inspired many musicians, including Lang Lang, to take up the instrument. Liszt's orchestral compositions are filled with passion, fire, and emotion. His Faust Symphony is one of the most emotionally supercharged works there is, paving the way for the hyper-romanticism of the late 19th century. So while ecstatic fandom might not seem unusual in our world of Swifties and Gallagher devotees, it's incredible to think it all started with this remarkable piano showman. Williams Happy introduces our music research and technology. It's an article titled Happy Songs. These are the musical elements that make us feel good. This is published in NeuroscienceNews.com on the 12th of April, 2023. Music has a unique power to affect the way people feel, and many people use music to enhance or change their mood, channel emotions, and for psychological support. The strong emotional impact of music is derived from its profound physical and psychological effects. For example, listening to relaxing music often has a positive impact on the autonomic nervous system, which regulates many key bodily functions by slowing down breathing, regulating heart rate, lowering blood pressure, and reducing muscle tension. Listening to music also affects us at a deep physiological level, as it has a strong impact on the endocrine system, which is responsible for hormone production. Music can stimulate the release of the neurotransmitters, which affect experiences of pleasure, by increasing the production of dopamine, the reward hormone, reducing levels of cortisol, the stress hormone, and increasing an antibody responsible for strengthening the immune system. Of course, these benefits are only experienced if we listen to music that we enjoy. Familiarity also affects enjoyment, but even new music can stimulate positive physical and psychological responses if it is similar to other music that we like. Music we don't like can have a strong adverse effect upon mood and well-being. If we don't like a song, or if it brings back negative memories, it won't make us happy, regardless of the quality. Portable listening devices and music streaming platforms have made it possible to choose from an unprecedented selection of musical styles. People can now listen to their favorite music anytime, anywhere. This means music can be used to create a personal soundscape. This is common when using public transport, for example, as many passengers use headphones to create an individualized sonic environment as a distraction from the less pleasant aspects of traveling on crowded and noisy transport systems. In a recent survey, 71% of 2,000 participants reported that music was the strongest influence on their mood, and that almost 75% regularly listened to music to cheer themselves up. A review of published research was conducted to find out which musical features tend to be present in quote-unquote happy songs. It should be remembered that musical preferences and expectations are culture-dependent. For example, some Asian cultures have different associations between positive-negative emotions and major-minor chords. So Western happy songs may not be globally interpreted as such. There may also be age-related differences in interpretation. Within Western cultures, there are certain components of popular music which are commonly linked with positive emotions. Music that is perceived as happy is usually written in a major key with a bright tone, featuring instruments with a bright timbre, such as trumpets or electric guitars. Happy music usually adds the seventh note of the scale to the main three notes in the chord. This creates a brief feeling of tension or pleasurable expectation, followed by relief or resolution when the harmonic progression proceeds as our previous listening experience predicts. For many people, listening to music becomes an immersive flow experience, which can distract from everyday concerns. Active musical participation through dancing or singing along brings additional enjoyment. A simple, consistent rhythm based on two or four beats in a bar increases the song's danceability, while a binary structure, verse, chorus, verse, chorus, helps to establish familiarity so the song quickly becomes sing-alongable. Faster music tends to induce more positive emotion than slower music, Research suggests that music that is perceived as happy is usually performed at a tempo between 140 and 150 beats per minute, BPM. Tempo is a confounding variable because faster music increases arousal excitement, but this may not always be associated with happiness. What is certain is that music can have a profound effect on our sense of well-being. Just stick on whatever might tempt you to do a happy dance and start to feel good. And as Bobby McFerrin sings, "Don't worry, be happy."
Song I wrote, you might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be happy.
So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this day back in 1955 that singer Harry Belafonte recorded the song Day-O. The name of that song was changed to what? Was it A, Haitian Farewell, B, Only You, C, The Banana Boat Song, or D, Jello? And the correct answer is answer C, The Banana Boat Song. As noted in an article by Alex Hopper, published on 4/26/2023 in AmericanSongwriter.com, even those unfamiliar with Belafonte or Calypso will likely know this song thanks to its pervasiveness in pop culture, including the movie Beetlejuice and the cover interpolation by Lil Wayne. The irresistible earworm that is Banana Boat, Day-O, is still firmly stuck in our minds decades after Belafonte's version was released. Banana Boat, Day-O, has become a familiar face at Halloween parties across the country despite its origins. "It's not my song," Belafonte once said. "It's a song that belongs to millions of people in the Caribbean. An ancient work song that people, of which my family was one of them, who were plantation workers, sang in the day and they sang in the night. They sang every opportunity they could get to throw off the burdens of poverty, and therefore the song has great significance," he continued. "I'm just glad to see that the younger generations have picked it up and are carrying the song forward in their own way, just like I picked it up in my time." Elsewhere, Banana Boat, Day-O, has been covered a number of times, notably by the likes of Sarah Vaughan, Shirley Bassey, Steve Lawrence, and Rafi. All of this speaks to the timelessness of Banana Boat, Day-O. It's an endlessly catchy hit for any generation and will likely continue to pop up around the entertainment industry for decades to come. And the answer to our second question, it was on this very day back in 1998 that Mark Nieto filed a lawsuit against the band Aerosmith for what? A, he sued for alleged loss of affection from his wife. B, he sued for alleged loss of hearing. C, he sued for alleged loss of $1,000. Or D, all of the above. Correct answer? Answer B. Aerosmith was sued today back in 1998 for alleged loss of hearing suffered by a patron attending one of their concerts. As noted in an article published in sfgate.com on 10/21/98, a Walnut Creek man has sued the band Aerosmith and the Concord Pavilion for personal injury, contending that he suffered permanent hearing loss at a concert last year. Mark Nieto is seeking unspecified damages to cover medical expenses and wage losses after he developed continuous ringing in his ears, according to a lawsuit filed today. According to the suit, Nieto attended the band's October 20, 1997 concert celebrating the release of Aerosmith's Nine Lives album, and was not aware of warnings for ear damage. Concord City Attorney Richard Doyle said that although he has not seen a copy of the lawsuit, it appears to be the first of its kind filed against the city-owned open-air amphitheater in the foothills of Mount Diablo. "We'll look into it, but this is a new one," he said. "Performers at the Concord Pavilion are primarily responsible for setting up speakers and other equipment. We do not control the sound," venue rep said. "The artists control the sound. The tickets include a general disclaimer regarding injury to patrons. Aerosmith has attracted legions of fans since 1970 with such hits as Dream On. Earlier this year, the band scored the top spot on Billboard magazine's top 100 singles list with its hits rock ballad, I Don't Want to Miss a Thing, from the movie Armageddon. According to court papers, Nieto's wife has had to care for him as a result of his hearing loss. A spokeswoman for the band could not be reached for comment. So let's close out today's program with Aerosmith's Dream On, and I'll keep the volume low enough to prevent any loss of hearing. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is the language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.